It's time for Hanson McLean Advisors Money Matters, hosted by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, credentialed financial advisors serving you since 1993.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to have you with us as we talk about the world of finance. Both myself and my co-host, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself, and we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And our goal is to help you make wise choices with your money so that you've got some good strategies in your life, and so that sometimes your monies aren't driving you too bonkers.
Yeah. It's a difficult time. Scott, did you see this on the last couple of weeks where China bought that building in New York
a few weeks back,
$1.95 billion. You know what it reminded me of is in the early 80s when Japan bought Pebble Beach.
That was like the late 80s, wasn't it? It was like near the beginning of the end.
For Japan.
Yeah.
It was reminiscent. So I went online.
How about all these Russian oligarchs buying these penthouses and stuff in New York?
No.
Spending... Didn't one go for like almost $1 billion or something? It was so, whatever the number one, it was so outrageous, I couldn't believe it.
So what's been interesting in this whole, we talk about these Russian oligarchs. So in order to try to influence...
we're on Russian oligarchs. The purpose of this program is to help you with some finance, but we can learn things from all this other stuff here.
Well, thank you.
And by the way... If you'd like to be part of it, we got a good program lined up. Not only are we going to talk about the Russian oligarchs, we're going to
Wouldn't you tune in for that?
We can talk about our own czars here. Why do we call things czars? Anyway, if you want to be part of the
why
program.
Why do we call them czars?
I find it offensive myself. It's like moving to be a communist here or what? Anyway, if you've got a question or a thought or someone's recommending something to you or we're concerned about whatever, if you want to be part of a program here, you can reach us. The contact number is 916 area code 921-1530. Again, that's 921-1530. You can also send us an email at questions@moneymatters.com. Again, 921-1530 if you want to call us.
1-800-834-1530.
And questions@moneymatters.com if you would like to email something to us. So
well, they can text us too, can they not? Do you know the text number? Do you remember that? There's something.
I haven't used
four
it the last
nines.
Couple. I haven't used it the last couple because we have more emails than texts.
Have we been getting texts though?
What happens if someone
doesn't have access?
Because it gets converted to some other format.
Until it comes to
you. Well, there's a text. It's actually not hitting my phone immediately when you text us. It's going to some system, and then it pops up on a screen, and I don't know where it's coming from. But to answer your question.
It's 9999
where, I've got it. You know, it's a silly. They keep changing.
So anyway, back to the
word. Here it is. Oh, no. 916-229-9999.
So, going back to the Russian oligarchs, what was really interesting to me is so the Ukraine. When Putin looked like he was going to go into the Ukraine, the world said, "Hey, we got to stop," and they started seizing properties of some of these oligarchs that were friends of Putin, and they said, "Hey, we're just going to seize these." And maybe you'll influence Putin. So what?
We're just going to seize these.
We're going to
hope you don't mind.
Well, what are they afraid of now? What's Putin attempting to do? He's threatening to do now is start to seize American assets in the U.S. In Russia, and these are not friends of Obama or anyone. They're just American assets. They're corporations. So if you look at the number of McDonald's that operate in Russia.
They shut those couple down, right?
A couple of them, they said.
That was just a little.
That was a little, hey, buddy, don't mess with us too much. The number of Kentucky Fried Chickens, KFCs that operate.
There's a lot more KFCs around
the
world.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, a lot of KFCs. And the aluminum factories, there's parts of the Dreamliner that is actually manufactured in Russia. So there's these unintended consequences are like, hey, you mess with my buddies, I'll mess with your corporations.
Well, it's also kind of a reminder of the risk. Anytime we're international investing, what other risks are there? For example, I mean, in China, the Alibaba went public.
Oh, are you? I would not. You could not get me to buy that stock.
The thing that's interesting
and
about
and I'm not
this,
allowed to endorse or encourage or discourage the purchase of an individual security. But there's no way in the world
you might be allowed to. You just need to disclose the anyway.
I do not have an interest in this.
The thing that was interesting about that is if you own shares of Alibaba, you are not exactly owning shares of the company.
That is correct.
Because China does not allow for foreign ownership of corporations.
Yeah, you own a shadow share.
That's right.
A shadow share. And they operate there, oh, I guess it's everywhere. I mean, in the U.S., you
What's
know,
that?
The if the government doesn't like you, they can shut you down.
Well, some are regulatory bodies. It almost feels like some of the...
Anyway. Yeah.
All right, we should take some calls here. 921-1530 if you want to join Hanson McLean. We're talking with John. John, you're with Hanson McLean Advisors.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello.
Really chill.
Thank you.
Hey, I had a question for you. I recently inherited some farm property, and it has marginal amount of income over the years. It's not a very large piece. It's 160 acres, but in this area, the prices per acre has increased dramatically over the last several years.
Where is it located?
Up in Yolo County.
Okay.
And so my belief is, you know, the almond industry has really taken over quite a bit of the area, and they're really striving to buy a property.
Uh-huh.
10 years ago, this property was worth about 900 an acre. Now it's 10,000 to 15,000 an acre.
Wow.
Yeah, it is really jumping up. Currently, right now, on the income on the property for farming it, it goes anywhere from $3,000 a year. This year, we're looking at about $8,000 for the entire year.
So for all 160 acres or...
Yeah.
So you make $8,000 for this 160 acres, or you could sell this for, you think, $15,000 an acre?
Up to that, yeah.
Okay, so what's your question for us?
Well, if I did sell it, I mean, there's a potential I could sell it and reinvest that money. I mean, I'm getting $8,000 an acre. Well, plus, let me add one other.
Oh, no, you're making – wait, so let's stop for a second.
Sure.
Is the net profit $8,000 an acre or $8,000
That's for the 160 acres.
Yeah,
correct?
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And my tax insurance is about $2,000 a year, $2,500 a year.
Okay.
So you're not making really any money.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah.
On that piece of property, I have a small communications rental piece that's got like a 20-year lease on it. That's $4,000 a year.
That's a cell tower, right?
Essentially, yeah.
Okay.
And so that's the entire.
So this is a lot of money here, right?
Yeah.
Here's one of the things we like to look at anytime someone inherits an asset, whether it's a farm or a house or a stock, whatever. Would you buy this today?
That's always the question, because remember, the asset doesn't know you own it. So there's no emotional attachment between you and the asset. Would you purchase this farmland today if you had the cash? Would you consider it a good investment?
Personally, myself?
Yes, you.
No, I'm not a farmer.
Well,
okay,
there's your answer.
Yeah.
I mean, see, when did you inherit this?
Just about a year ago.
Okay.
So you've got almost no tax implications in the sale of it.
So you sell this, if you get $10,000 an acre...
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
And
that could set you up financially.
And you'll have no tax implications other than if there's been any growth in the value of the property.
Because you're
since
looking
today,
at $1.6 million plus, right?
Yeah.
What about capital gains on that?
No, because you inherited. So the basis is the value of the date you inherited it. So the only capital gain is what the value that it grew by.
Over the last year.
Or if it lost value in the last year, you could actually take a loss on it.
Okay.
So
it's still under the Williamson Act right now. So it's.
I can't speak to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's on a lower tax base.
Oh, but you inherited the property. So when you inherit
property tax.
it's the value of the date you inherited it. So I would actually, John, you sound relatively young, I'd look at this thing as an opportunity to set yourself up for life, which is, how do I take these dollars and invest them? Do I pay off a mortgage? Do I buy a rental property?
It's a really good opportunity. And if you would have received these dollars in cash, if you were to receive an inheritance like this in cash, the last thing you would do is take it all and go buy some farm somewhere that's grossing $8,000 a year.
Yeah.
Now, right. That's not to say that it's not, the property might continue to increase over the future, and it might still be a good investment. But for you, I just don't think it'd be the type of thing. If you're my brother, I'd certainly tell you to get rid of the thing and move on. So,
and if you were my brother, I'd want to know why I wasn't included in the inheritance.
Hey, we got to take a break. Stick around for more Hanson McLean. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
It is a nice weekend, as always. Weekends are always good.
So I got these,
By the way, real quick, if you want to be part of the program, love to take your call, 916-921-50. You give me this look like I interrupted you.
I was in the middle of something important.
I'll be the judge of how important that is, and our listeners will as well. 921-1530, or you can send us an email, questions@moneymatters.com. Your story, Pat.
It's too late now. No. So my headphones... I got these new ear pads on them from Amazon.com.
What's the story?
These are my old school. I've probably had these headphones for 15 years. And
are those noise-canceling Bose noise-canceling?
Yeah, but I always liked them, and then the ear...
What is that thing, on-off switch? That's huge.
Yeah, because they're old school. I mean, the switch is large.
See, I had a pair of Bose years ago. They broke, and now I've got Panasonic. Because my Bose broke, I went to a different brand. Because they broke right after warranty.
Did you see that
a couple weeks ago
when Kaepernick wore the Dr. Dre's for an interview and was fined by the NFL $10,000 because he didn't, because it was a competing product? And so I was talking to my boys about this, my 13-year-old and 15-year-old, and they said, oh, yeah. He knew they were going to get a fine when he put those on, but what's $10,000 to Dr. Dre? They said it was, in the 15-year-old said, it was well worth the $10,000.
I actually saw the story. I didn't even bother reading it. You know, you get a lot of stories. Like, does this matter to my life?
Well, I thought that I was just excited. My son actually did the math in his head that said, not only was the fine not big just to have Kaepernick wear them, but the ensuing controversy and all the publicity they got. You know, someone at the Dre headphones, Dr. Dre headphones, was like pushing this story.
Of course. So you took your personal headphone story, related to some previous news story, and brought it back to the financial realm to fit in with Hanson McLean's Money Matters program.
And not even on purpose. It was a coincidence. How did that happen? All right. So enough about us. Let's listen to what the callers have to say.
About us. Oh, great. All right, let's 921-1530. We're talking with Joe. Joe, you're with Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, so it's kind of a coincidence that you guys have brought up your kids. My question is regarding whole life for my newborn baby girl.
Congrats.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. My wife and I, we recently saw a commercial for Gerber
Life. Yes, Gerber Life.
Yes,
guaranteed insurability. College
exactly.
funding. Do
yeah,
not.
So
you have no interest. You have no interest
not,
in this.
Well, in the Gerber Life. He certainly has interest in life insurance.
For himself.
Yes. Continue on, Joe.
So. See, because I'm considering financial planning for my children, some kind of nest egg that would benefit them when they graduate high school, if they're considering going into college like I did,
mm-hmm.
or, venturing off into some other endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be able to provide them something. My wife suggested treasury bonds, but then this commercial came up, and now I was considering some other form of venture that might,
and do you have,
might yield something for
do
them.
Do you have life insurance on yourself?
I do.
Okay.
And how much?
Right now I have $50,000 in whole life, and then I have term life at $500,000 from my employer, and then $500,000 are private.
Okay. So you got quite a bit of life insurance.
All right.
And why do you have the $50,000 whole life policy?
That's something that I accrued from my grandparents.
Okay. So you, I like the idea that you want to start saving for your child.
And you're very prudent by having life insurance.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it's rare.
It's amazing, Joe, when you look at the statistics. I don't have them in front of me, but if we look over the last 25 years, every year there's less and less life insurance in force. So the less people like you, Joe, are when you have babies, are buying life insurance. I came across somebody not long ago, two kids had no life insurance, didn't even think about it. I'm kind of like, how could you not even think about what might happen if you die? I mean, your statistical chance of dying are pretty small. You could tell it by
how. Well, that's why life insurance is so inexpensive.
When you're young.
Yeah. So, Joe, what you want to do is most likely is to start funding a 529 plan, which is a college funding plan for your child. Perfect time to start. It's the best way to accrue money for college. Assume that they're going to go to some college or secondary school. If they don't, the money becomes yours, or you can transfer to another child, a niece, a nephew, or you pay 10% penalty and you can take it out for your own dollars. In the state of California, you have what's called a scholarshare. So if you go to scholarshare.com, the money is managed by TIAA Cref. And you would get the aggressive
age-adjusted
plan is what you should purchase for your child. You set it up. You can put $10 a month, $50 a month, $100, whatever the number is. There is a maximum that they'll allow you that you can't go over, but I think it's like $250,000 or something. I've only met one person that was at the maximum.
It's a max? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, which, by the way, was way too much money to save for the college education. Because I knew their kids.
Oh, wow.
I'm joking.
Ouch.
No, but, so that's what you want to do.
That's what, I mean, quite frankly, that's what I did with my kids.
That's what I did with my kids.
And I know your grandparents had set up this whole life plan for you, probably when you were a baby, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a day when whole life was a very common investment type thing. It pretty much would start when they were, and I bet when your grandparents bought it, there was someone that came by the house every month to collect the premium. That's how it was sold in those days. Thursdays, the guy came and sold pots and pans. Fridays, the guy came by
Fuller Brush. The Fuller Brush man.
Fuller Brush.
I remember the Fuller Brush man coming to my house growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Anyway, so
you can't get enough quality brushes in your house.
You really can't. but the thing, we're not big fans of combining investments with insurance. Most of the time.
Yeah. Occasionally, very rarely does it work. But for you, the 529 plan,
I would say buy term insurance. As far as savings for yourself, I'd use your company-sponsored savings plan, 401k. If you don't have that, I'd use an IRA. I'd fund a Roth IRA, and I'd fund a 529 plan for my child. I would do all those things before I looked at buying a whole life or a permanent.
And even after I did that, I'd made sure I had ample dollars in a brokerage or savings account before I bought a whole life policy.
Make sure there's money set aside, too, for
an emergency.
Yeah.
All righty?
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Joe, congratulations on the baby.
I know.
Appreciate it.
How old's your girl?
Well, she's my youngest, and she's 1 month.
Oh, wow.
1 month. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you sleeping at all?
Well, I work for the U.S. Department of Justice, so I'm actually gone a lot, but my wife is a superhuman, so she's got it down.
And Joe, what do you do for the DOJ?
I work in law enforcement.
Oh, awesome. That is good times. Truly appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your service there, and congrats, Joe. And
I appreciate it.
Having starting out as a family, it's a...
So I saw a friend of mine this last week, same age, 51. He's got a one-year-old and a three-year-old at home. Yeah. I said to him, you know, they'll be
is
young.
Is this a second kind of go-around?
Yes, it's a second kind of go-around. So I said to him, You know
why
what?
Why do people make their life so complicated?
I don't know, but I said,
wow.
I said they'll be able to push your wheelchair. They'll still be young when they're in high school. They could push you around.
51 and having a baby.
Oh, yeah. Nice guy. Great guy. He says he's as happy as he's ever been. He said, you know, he's got like a 22-year-old and a 20-year-old.
I mean, there's certain ages that are fun.
Yeah, he said it.
So the teenage, see, add another 15 years.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
And he'll be 66 with teenagers in the house. There's a good time.
Turn the hearing aid off.
That would be, yeah, turn the hearing aid off.
No, what he told me, he goes, I know it's hard at times. He said, but he says, I'm as happy as I've ever been.
Well, good for him.
I was happy for him.
All right, let's grab another life insurance question while we're on the topic. We're talking to Jonathan. Jonathan, you're with Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Hello.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful. Thanks for joining the program.
Yeah, you pretty much covered some of my question, but yeah, because I've always been a believer of, just buy separate insurance from investment.
Uh-huh.
But lately I've been, talking to this coworker about, tax free versus the tax deferred.
Uh-huh.
They said that the fees and then, the interest, and it was even though it's lower.
Yeah. And the idea, Jonathan, the idea with the life insurance is you put the money in and then you actually can take the principal back out and borrow the difference.
Take a loan,
and
as long you avoid as, tax, you never pay taxes.
Never pay taxes. As long as the insurance policy is in place on the day you die, then you never pay taxes. That's the story, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much. They said just get the smallest insurance and then just fund it.
The biggest cash value. I've been doing this for 25 years. I've never seen it actually happen.
You shouldn't say never.
Never.
Oh, here's what I have seen. I've seen people later in life that have had phantom income issues with life insurance
because the policy lapsed.
The policy's lapsing, or that the thing's about. I've seen them blow up.
But have you ever seen? When I said never, I've never seen anyone use it like the way it's described when it's sold.
I haven't either. I have not either.
So theoretically, it makes sense.
I actually own a variable life. It's a variable universal life policy.
Yes, variable universal life. That's what I was thinking.
Okay.
Because I was going to get also something like long-term care insurance anyway. So this
don't
this
buy insurance. It inside it. I would not buy it inside it.
Yeah, you don't want to connect the two things.
I know they like to sell it like that. They got all these different riders. Insurance costs money, right? We all know that.
Yes.
I like to make sure I can insure those things that I can't afford to self-insure. If I can self-insure things, I don't bother insuring it. I have high deductibles on my home, my car, etc., because I can self-insure the small things. It's the bigger things that I want insurance on. The long-term care, I would separate those things out of the contract. And if you do a good enough job saving while you're younger, you sound relatively young, you won't need the long-term care insurance because you'll have enough assets to take care of your expenses. So I would not, and we would not recommend having any of permanent insurance until you've maximized your company's retirement savings plans, you've maximized your Roth IRA, and even that, I mean, think about this. What if you went out and bought a S&P 500 fund, index fund, right?
Which has almost?
Very little dividends. Most of it's going to be capital appreciation. So it's going to grow tax deferred. At some point in time, if you choose to take out more, it's capital gain tax. But you could also take a loan on that. You can pledge
and
those
long
securities.
As you die when it's in when you own
all the gains tax
all
free.
The gains tax free.
Step up in basis. Now that's never talked about when someone's pitching a life insurance product to you because they have very high commissions on the life insurance product. There's a number of things that we would recommend you do way before you. Choose to buy a variable universal life policy. There are times when they work, but most of the time they don't. Anyway, we got to take a quick break here. If you want to be part of the program, our contact number is 916-921-1530 or email us at questions@moneymatters.com. This is Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you are joining us on this weekend. We're talking about financial stuff. Glad you're sticking through the program. Hope you're enjoying yourself on this. Before we go back, the 401k has been around since the early 80s. The 401k actually came about by mistake.
It was a quirk in the law.
Yeah, it wasn't something that was designed. Wasn't that there a policymaker sitting around, what would be a great way for us to have a retirement savings? It just happened. It was in the Internal Revenue Code 401, subsection A. There's provision in there.
A or K?
Sorry, K.
Because there is a 401A.
Yeah, I understand that.
I wasn't saying it for the benefit of you. I was saying it for the benefit of the listeners. I was hoping you knew there was a 401A.
But the way you said it, like, Scott, you're wrong again. Let me please correct you.
I was saying it for the benefit of the listeners.
So, in any case, it kind of came apart by accident. Of course, the benefit, the 401Ks have a couple great benefits to them. There's some drawbacks.
Not many. Not for the employee. There's drawbacks for the employer.
There's drawbacks in the employee.
Not many. What are the drawbacks in a 401k for the employee?
I guess we're starting with the drawbacks first.
Okay.
Number one, you've got limited investment choices.
You can have limited investment choices based upon what your employer offers.
Most plans limit your choices.
How many investment choices do you have in your 401k at work, Scott?
Well, we now have essentially unlimited because we have a brokerage account attached to it, a brokerage window. Which more and more employers are using, but most do not have that. And even that, I'm stuck using the broker that the employer chooses.
Okay.
And paying whatever fees are set up on that particular contract, which are probably more expensive than if I set up an account directly.
All right. So yeah. I'll buy into this limited amount of investment choices, drawback, 401k.
That's the biggest drawback.
That is the biggest drawback. Yeah. The other is fees. You don't know what they are. In many plans.
Well, they disclose them. Each year you get a stack like this of disclosure. Big, thick stack.
But you can't control them. It's just what they are.
That's right. So if you say, I want to just have the lowest cost funds available, you may or may. So that's the main drawback. Of course, there's also your money's tied up until retirement time, which is probably a good thing. The benefits of a 401k are many. And I think maybe one of the biggest benefits is the fact that money is yanked out of your paycheck before you have the chance to spend it. That is quite frankly, probably for most people, greater than the match, any company match that they're going to get, and greater than the tax deferral.
I have used you'd expect this kind of, I would think, from a financial advisor. Since the day I started work in any company, including my own, whatever the maximum was that you could save in one of these tax deferred programs. For a while, we used a simple IRA. What did we use? A SEP when you and I first started the company, a KEO. The whole thing. 401k. But my wife and I were talking about it the other day. I said, look at how much money is actually in this from this systematic savings.
Right. And there's a max.
It adds up.
Yeah. I would contribute the maximum as well. It certainly does add up. Right. Most people, there's always competing needs for our money, right?
Yes.
Always.
There's paycheck tennis comes shoes, in. Doughboy pool.
Whatever.
Frisbees.
Trip to Disneyland. As the kids get older, of course, there's college
Olive
expenses,
Garden.
Tons of different competing needs within the family, right?
Yes.
Always. Most people struggle with setting aside money each month when those needs are coming at you.
And the benefit of a 401k is it comes out before you see it.
Yeah, it's sucked out of there right before you have a chance to spend it. That's a great thing about it. Secondly, you have a tax-deferred growth. So unlike if those listeners that have had brokerage accounts or mutual funds on the outside and there's any transactions, you know what it's like when you get a 1099. You've got an account set up for retirement. You're letting things grow. You're not taking money out of it, but yet you get a 1099, you've got a report on your taxes, you've got a tax bill from money that's sitting there growing for you. And you're like, why am I paying this taxes? I don't want to spend the money. That's just how it works. Within a 401k, it's all tax deferred, so you don't have to worry about taxes. You have an investment in there that's run up in value. You can sell it, buy something else, don't have to worry about the taxes. It's truly a great thing, having this tax-deferred growth. And the third real advantage is the employer match. Many companies offer some sort of match.
So most
do. You get some free money when you put money, you contribute to the plan. The employer's kicking in some money as well. So that's clearly a tremendous benefit. Now, a number of years ago, how many years has Roth been around? About five or
four
six?
Four or five?
Somewhere in there. The
named after Eli Roth.
Was his name Eli?
No, I don't remember his name. Was it? What was his name?
What was it? What if his name was Ira Roth? That is a reality. It's a possibility. It's not. It's named after Senator Roth. I forget what his name was.
I don't remember
he's not
his name.
The, he's not in Senate. I don't know if he's still with us.
Ira Roth.
He could have been Ira Roth. Anyway.
So it was named after a senator that proposed the bill and shepherded
it
through.
That's where we have the Roth IRA. That's a pretty good legacy for yourself when you've got a retirement vehicle named after. I wonder if that could happen with us. Hanson McLean IRA. Anyway.
What are you worrying about? Your legacy
now?
Of
course. That's usually what I concern myself with.
Your legacy? You home writing your own obituary?
Wow, I've been working on that for years. So
anyway. Scott.
Great guy.
Great guy. Sorry. And then underline emphasis.
I am. Right? The whole thing.
No.
It's well, unfortunately, I got to cut it down a little because it's at 14 minutes now. I'm told if I can keep it around 8 to 9, it's going to be better.
Yeah.
So I'm working. Yeah. And I got to keep updating it, too. All the other things that I've accomplished, I got to add that in. My
and then he's going to like pause.
I got a little humor in there. It'll be a good one.
Oh, it's incredible. I can hardly wait to hear it.
My point is, so the Roth, I hope people are still with us here because the
whole smoke, your legacy.
All right, so the Roth 401k comes about 5 years ago.
There's something wrong with you. Okay, the Roth 401k comes out a few years ago.
And almost nobody's participating. The majority of Americans, 60, I forget the percentage of it, 69%, maybe it's more than that, are in the 15% tax bracket or lower.
Which means that they should actually be using the Roth IRA, Roth 401k.
Roughly half pay no income taxes. So
the deduction doesn't mean, but Scott, keep talking.
Thank you. So if you are in a low tax bracket or a no tax bracket today, you clearly would benefit by using a Roth 401k over the traditional 401k. With the Roth, you don't get that tax deduction up front, but it grows tax deferred and it'll be tax free at retirement. Unlike the traditional 401k, where you get the tax deduction up front, which is yet another benefit of the 401k, the tax deduction up front, but it is taxable to you at retirement. So if you're in a time now when you know you'll either have no tax or very low tax, and you could take advantage of that and lock that in with a promise from Congress
that they're not going to tax
it in the future.
But I think that people aren't using it because of inertia.
That's 100% what it is. Many of our listeners right now thinking that's probably a good idea. They might have even heard us talk about this some months back. But to switch to the Roth option, you got to go make sure your 401k offers it, which more and more do. Then you got to sign up for it.
But I kind of get it because we have the self-directed brokerage account in 401k, and I've had on my to-do list, right? We've installed it.
It's only been a few weeks.
I know, but it's been on my to-do list to move my money over into the self-directed brokerage account and put it in one of our bottles that investment model that our firm manages, which we can do on in the 401k. I haven't done it. Have you done it?
I have not got around to that yet. No.
But you want to, right?
I do want to, and if I could wave a magic wand right now, it would be done.
It's inertia.
But I got, and I look at my Monday and my Tuesday, and sometime it'll happen.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what it is.
I get it.
But
you should.
The takeaway here is really for a lot of people, that Roth 401k option would make great sense. Someone getting out of college, their first job, we've always encouraged them to sign up for that 401k, put at least 10% of their pay
in. And for most people, it would be the Roth.
The Roth 401k is what is going to be the best thing. So more and more companies are offering the Roth. The majority of Americans would be better off using the Roth. Obviously, there are some. If you're in a really high income, a traditional 401k is probably going to make more sense. Also, if you plan on leaving the state of California during retirement, that throws in another wrench because there the tax deduction today might be better off because it's going to be tax-free in their state if you moved to a tax-free state.
Which then a Roth would not be the best thing for you.
May not be. We never give absolutes because there's no absolutes. Every situation is different, that sort of thing. We're going to take a short break here. Stick with us through the break. When we come back, if you'd like to be part of the program, we're going to answer a couple emails, questions@moneymatters.com or the contact number 921-1530. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
The financial world is much more complex today than it was a generation ago. It used to be that all one needed to do was park their money in a high-yielding bank account and live off the interest. Those days are no more. With interest rates so low and the world so unsettling, it is now more important than ever that your retirement savings is managed with a focus on both return and downside protection. That's where Hanson McLean comes in. Hanson McLean has been serving folks for over 20 years, helping them achieve their financial and retirement goals. Plus, Hanson McLean Advisors is a registered investment advisory firm with the ability to choose from thousands of investments, both commonplace funds as well as less-known offerings. If you haven't seen what Hanson McLean Advisors can do for you, I encourage you to give their office a call and schedule a visit with one of their advisors. They have offices conveniently located in Roseville, Folsom, and Sacramento. Contact them today at HansonMcLean.com or 1-888-2-HANSON.
Accurate forecasts at the top and bottom of every hour, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to you, Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
We're going to take a couple emails now.
That sounds like fun.
Huh?
Let's go.
Why, if you noticed, as before we did this, I was a late adopter to the iPhone. With the BlackBerry, I resisted a BlackBerry. I said, look,
Did you ever own a BlackBerry?
No, that's what I'm saying. I resisted it. I had some friends, I said, I like not having my email portable. If I'm at my kids' soccer games, I'd like to be able to ignore things, watch the soccer game. When the iPhone came out, I got the iPhone, had the email. I kind of liked it, actually. It's like, yeah, all right, that's going all the time. But it just seems like every year it's more and more emails. Now with the Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, voicemail on the cell phone, voicemail at the office, voicemail at the home. There's a lot of different things.
Do you get those emails that someone's following you on Twitter?
No.
I get them all the time.
You need to turn off you upgraded your operating system, probably.
I did.
And whenever they do that, I don't know why Apple chooses to pretend like you didn't have any preferences before, but it changes them all.
Because truth be known, I didn't really know I had a Twitter account. I had heard rumor
I
of
have
it.
Followers on Twitter, and I didn't know I had a Twitter. That's inconvenient.
Well, because it's the Hanson McLean, they take content and that, yeah. I guess, are
a lot of people in the public sphere, not that you're necessarily in the public sphere, but yeah, have people helping them with their social media.
You mean Jennifer Aniston doesn't do her own? Or George Clooney?
I think George Clooney is doing his own, yes.
Yeah, actually, and
Jennifer Aniston.
By the way, from what I read in the papers, most people in sports should not be doing their own Twitter accounts. Because there's every 3 months or 4 months or something, someone says something really offensive. Anyway.
And the Twitter?
So now you get a lot of emails. I like the white papers. I get these emails all the time about white papers. I love the white paper.
When did they start having white papers? I mean, it's all of a sudden they appeared out of nowhere, the white papers.
Yeah. Every day I get an email that says new white paper, the great white paper, some white paper.
Why is it white? And it's not even on paper.
Don't know.
Anyway.
Although I've never read one of the white papers coming from the white paper email people.
So we're going to take a couple emails. Nick sends us this email. In the big picture of the national economy, stock markets goes up a record territory while unemployment is very high. Many unemployed are frustrated and no longer pursuing a job. My question, assuming employment starts picking up at a record pace, does not that have an inverse relationship with corporate earnings since payroll would bloat expenses, causing stock values to decrease? I find it hard to believe that increased levels of employment would have an increased level productivity across the board, keeping stock values on the upward trajectory. Your opinions. Here's the issue. You cannot have...
Let's summarize the question. Right? If... So the summary of the question is, hey, if...
And this is maybe something we're starting to see
now. If employment numbers drop, significant unemployment numbers drop, which means employment numbers increase, will it have a negative effect on cost of corporate America and hence a declining net income for corporate America, hence declining stock value?
And so we're already seeing some pressure in the labor market. And really... Right now, the number of people that are actually working in the workforce as a percentage of the population is low. Right?
The participation rate.
Yes, very low.
So the unemployment numbers actually don't mean nearly as much as the participation
rate.
Correct. They don't measure people that quit looking for work.
Right. There are, so if there's 10 people that are unemployed looking for work and four of them say, forget it, I'm not going to bother.
That doesn't show up in the unemployment numbers.
You can come back on the news and say, good news, a week ago there were 10 unemployed, today there's only six. Doesn't mean they're there four are working, they gave up.
Just they gave up.
They're home drinking Pabst Blue Ribbon or whatever they're doing, right?
Who doesn't enjoy a nice PBR?
They still make that beer?
Yes, they do.
Oh, they do.
In fact, it just sold to a
foreign company.
A Chinese company just bought them.
I remember reading about that.
Anyway,
all the major beer manufacturers. I think Coors is Coors still.
It's Molson. Coors Molson. Is it a U.S. owned company?
I don't know.
I don't know.
We don't know. It doesn't really matter.
But InBev or Budweiser is owned by a foreign.
Yeah, all the major brands are.
Yeah. Okay, but. This has nothing to do with the question.
About beer. How do we start talking about beer?
You had mentioned the guy staying home reading a Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Well, if you're unemployed, you're kind of depressed, and who knows what happens to that. So anyway, what we've got currently in the labor market, while there is still many unemployed out there, and why the participation percentage of people working is low, a lot of companies are having trouble finding skilled workers.
That is correct.
Because technology has replaced a lot of kind of mid-level. So there's a lot of mid-level jobs
that have gone away.
That's right.
So what we're seeing is service jobs, a lot of service jobs and higher level jobs, which is it all works into part of the immigration argument. But let's not go there.
So if we start seeing companies have to pay more and more for labor, that will lead to higher inflation by its nature.
Most certainly.
So the question is this: if in fact employers face higher labor costs, if they cannot pass that higher cost on to the consumer, it will have a negative impact on earnings, which hence should have a negative impact on the stock value of that. On the other hand, if companies experience higher labor costs and they are able to pass on those increased costs
to the consumer,
then it's inflation. Then it may not have any impact at all.
But there's so many other things that actually come into play. Energy cost comes into play. Transportation cost comes into play. So you could have an increasing labor cost, but if you have a decreasing cost somewhere else in the food chain, the increasing labor costs are offset.
Yeah. So,
and energy costs are a big, big deal for corporate America.
It's huge.
It's massive. And so we won't...
And it's getting worse. Of course, oil prices are down. That's helping in some parts.
Significantly.
Yeah. Helping something.
It's not helping the West Coast as much as it is the rest of the country because of fracking. It's hard to get the oil over the Rockies.
Well, and not just oil. I think in this state we keep having, as far as energy costs, all kinds of other things. The percentage that needs to be come from renewable sources and on and on and on.
Okay. So right. We did answer that question.
Yes,
and excellent. It was an excellent answer, by the way.
Let's take another email here. This is from Tim. I have a question I've been wrestling with for a while now. I sound like this is Dear Abby. I have a question I've been wrestling with for a while.
My husband.
My wife and I.
Really?
Are retired and all children are out of the home. The home we live in and our cars are paid off, so we're out of debt. We have about $500,000 in savings and get $8,000 per month in retirement. Doesn't sound like a bad position to be in. No kids around, money in the bank, $8,000 a month in retirement. In 2005, we bought a condo so our daughter could live there without rent increases. She pays the condo bill, and we pay the HOA bill of $315 per month. The balance owed on the condo is $150,000. My question is this. Should I pay off the condo, which we could do without much of a problem? It's 3.5% interest. That's about $400 per month. So,
well, it depends on where the $500,000 is, because he says he has it in savings.
Yeah.
So if it's sitting in a bank, pay the condo off. If it's in a IRA, so sitting in the bank outside of an IRA or any qualified plan, I would pay the condo off. But if it's inside of an IRA and it's invested moderate, I would. If it's inside an IRA, I would not pay the condo off.
Because
period.
It's the tax consequences. And if you're, if somebody's 25 or 35, there might be some other options. As we get closer to retirement, then you got to ask yourself, what is it worth the risk? What are the risks here of investing the dollars elsewhere or having a for sure 3.5%?
And that's what this would be, is if he paid the condo off, it's a, assuming that his daughter continues to make the payments on the home. Or on the condo, it's an.
Of course, he could always evict his daughter.
That never. you could always evict a family member yeah. In theory only.
I'm just kidding.
In theory only.
But I think one way to think about things: if the condo was paid for today, would you go out and get a loan on it at 3.5%?
And
so
if the money,
if you've got money to pay off a loan, you need to ask yourself: if you didn't have that money and the loan was paid off, would you, in today's market, go out, refinance that property to get the loan?
And in most cases, people would not, especially with the retiree. So if the money, the answer to the, is it Tim and the Tim and his wife, the question they've been wrestling with, is if the money was sitting in a bank account outside of an IRA, because it just says savings, and savings means a lot of different things, then pay it off. Yep. If it's inside of an IRA, probably not.
So this week I was talking with a Hanson McLane client, been a Hanson McLane client for many, many years, and had it came and inherited some money. And I advised the, we advised the client to pay off the primary residence, retired, that sort of thing. And they asked, well, they were confused, but they said, in the, how come you didn't tell us to pay the home off before?
I had the same thing about 3 years ago, and the client said, well, why didn't you give me that advice earlier?
Because before, everything they had was in a retirement account, and the tax consequences of getting the money out, let's just say someone had a mortgage for $100,000. Let's say someone had $1 million in an IRA and owed $100,000 on their home.
How much money would they have had to take out of the IRA in order to pay off the...
Maybe $150,000, maybe $180,000 to net the $100,000. So...
But it's different in an inheritance or money that's in saving outside of an IRA.
Cash that's been taxed can be have a lot more flexibility than money that's sitting inside an IRA. So anyway, those are our questions. If you want to email us a question, send us your question to questions@moneymatters.com. Again, questions@moneymatters.com, and we will take we can answer your question there. And you could also contact the program, 921-1530. We also encourage you to visit our website, HansonMcLane.com. We have lots of videos we put out on a variety of different things. We write articles on a variety of different things. You can get a podcast of this radio program. If you're missing it, you can, anytime you'd like, listen to the program.
Anytime.
There's just a lot of good information on the website. Again, the website, HansonMcLane.com. Of course, Hanson McLane is an investment advisory firm. We've been serving people in the Northern California community for over 20 years. And anyway, that's, I guess,
that's our plug.
Our shameless plug for the week.
Shameless.
Hey, we're here every Saturday from 10 to 11. We rebroadcast Sundays from 2 to 3. It's been a pleasure being with you this weekend. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. This has been Hanson McLane's Money Matters.